Good evening and welcome to Valley Voices, where we bring you conversations covering all things local, from news, politics, and government to culture and community issues that are relevant to Lehigh Valley residents. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, the executive director here at WDIY. Tonight, my guest is Easton Mayor Sal Panto, who is currently serving his fifth consecutive term. Tonight, we'll be hearing from Mayor Panto on several initiatives that are currently shaping Easton's future. But first, let's talk about your fifth consecutive term. You've been now in office for 16 years. You're going on 17. You were mayor previously from 1984 to 92, when you were elected at age of 31.
31, yes.
Not something I was thinking about at age 31.
It was a
31.
Long time ago. Long time ago.
So I think it's safe to say that you love being the mayor of Easton.
I love being the mayor of Easton. I think it's, you know, local government is where your feet on the ground. You see people on a face-to-face everyday situation, whether it's in the grocery store, the local church or whatever, synagogue, you're there. And people can come up, you're accessible. You can't go to Washington, D.C. and make a speech on the Senate floor, but you can come to the city council and give us your opinion and your comments and yell and scream if you have to. Fortunately, you haven't had to.
That's good. So tell me, what is the most impactful part of being mayor for you personally?
I think if you're not a people person that doesn't like to be interrupted and bothered when you're out to dinner with your family, don't be mayor. I mean, you have to love people. And I was a school teacher, so I love kids. The difference is I had, you know, 180 kids that were like 13 and 14-year-olds, and I went to 30,000 adults. And I love both of them. Teaching is still in my heart. I definitely would love to go back to teaching at some point in my life. But I'm getting older and older, so I doubt that's going to happen. But who knows? After I'm done being mayor, I'll only be 75 years old. So
yeah.
I could run for president.
The new 60, right?
Yeah, I could run for president.
You sure can. All right. So let's talk about what's going on in the city of Easton. So one of the things that you have going is your participation in the Blueprint Communities. Mm-hmm. So it's a Southside Neighborhood Initiative. So tell us a little bit about that neighborhood revitalization program, basically.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, neighborhoods are the lifeblood of a community, and mayors are, we have a dichotomy between what we do to have visitors, attract visitors and tourists, and what you do to appease your neighbors and serve them. And they don't always mix, because some people who are neighbors don't like the new residents coming in, they don't like the visitors, they don't like the festivals, but other people do. I think the Blueprint Communities, which is a program with the Federal Home Loan Bank, not only gives us opportunity to get grants with the Pennsylvania Department of Economic and Community Development, but it also gives us an opportunity to sit down and plan and see what the people of the South Side, where I live, really want. We do a lot of planning for downtown, but we don't do a lot of planning for neighborhoods. And neighborhoods have gone through a big transition where the paradigm has shifted from owning your own home to getting away from that and renting. And young people would rather rent than own, and that's not the American dream. So the older people have a hard time understanding why we have all these apartments and why people are creating all these apartments. And frankly, as my youngest daughter and her husband are looking for a place, they're renting a townhouse right now with their two girls. And that, they, you know, when the faucet is leaking, he calls up, "Hey, John, my faucet is leaking," and somebody comes and fixes it. And he likes that. Doesn't want to cut grass, doesn't want to shovel snow. And so younger people want more time, the time that they have. They don't want to be doing yard work. They want to be spending time with their kids and their family.
Right, right. So can you share some examples of past successes from similar initiatives that inspired Easton to join the Blueprint Communities?
Well, one of the things that local government officials don't do well enough, and we just did this past week with our parking summit, is we don't ask the residents what they're thinking and what they want. We know that on the South Side, one of our main initiatives with the Blueprint Communities is to plan and decide what neighbors want. And on the South Side, what they want is what's not around anymore. And the same thing as the paradigm is shifting from homeownership to rentals is the same thing as happening is shifting away from mom and pop locally owned grocery stores and small retailers to these big box chains like the Targets and the Walmarts of the world. And we know that over there on the South Side, people want to get back to where, like it was when I grew up. I mean, I had a steak shop that I went to. Barney's was on Nesquehoney Street. Wishbone was on Davis Street. I had grocery stores locally owned and small and a large Acme. So we're trying to find out what people want and then have our Department of Economic Development go out and recruit those types of businesses.
So what phase are you in right now with the Blueprint Communities, and how does it phase out?
We're still in the training phase because the Blueprint Communities have teamed up with the Pennsylvania State University Extension, and they come and we attend training sessions and planning sessions. Basically, it's to develop a plan to revitalize the neighborhood, and that's what it's for. You know, we found out that 46% of the people who live on Southside speak Hispanic languages. We found out that the average home is too expensive for people that make a living on Southside, and we know that. Affordable housing is a national epidemic, and no one is addressing it at the national or state level, so we're addressing it at the local level. We have several projects that are a part of our American Rescue Plan. We put $4 million aside for affordable housing, and we just finished one we have over on the South Side is Shiloh Commons, working with the Greater Shiloh Baptist Church. And we'll build maybe as many as 60 apartments that are rental. Rent is based on income. And we're building 6 townhouses on Phillips Street. And hopefully the city will put in a sanitary sewer so that they don't have to pay for that and add it to the cost. The price of the homes, the problem with affordable housing is you can't address it because as a person, before I became mayor, I worked for a home builder. And we built about 100 houses a year. And the problem is the price of wood is the same whether you're building an affordable house or a regular house. And the price of the appliances and the countertops, everything is the same. And the electricians want to be paid more, the plumbers. And so what happens is you're paying the same. The 6 houses that we're building on Phillips Street with Shiloh Church, they'll cost about $225,000 to build. And we have a home builder who's bid on it and will bid on that. But we want to sell for about $175,000. So you need $50,000 worth of assistance. Right. And that assistance only comes from one place, the government. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do what we can to get the price down that actually construct them. Because it's an area of Southside that doesn't have sanitary sewers. We're not going to put it on a septic system.
Right. And why doesn't it have sanitary sewers?
There's never been any houses in that area.
Oh, okay.
It's the southern end of South Side, and there just hasn't been any houses there ever.
And so you have to get the city to build it.
Yeah. We'll do the extension. We'll do the main. The lateral has to be part of the connection from the house to the main line has to be paid for by the homeowner. It's an area where I used to go up and pick up my grandfather and carry his tomatoes and vegetables. He had his vegetable. He had about a 1-acre garden there. And he went up there every day and planted the seeds and harvested it. And in the fall, we picked them. And he made his own tomato sauce. He canned it and all that.
Right.
Well, my grandmother did. But not my grandfather. But back then, the men
He grew it.
Yeah, he grew
he
it.
He grew it. She cooked it. Okay, so back to Blueprint Community. So you're going to get through this training and learning phase and then do the analysis?
Yeah, we just did, as part of our national night out, we did a survey to survey the residents of what they really wanted, what they needed, what they felt the direction was of the Southside neighborhood. The interesting thing is Southside went through a period of time back in 1973-74 when PennDOT widened the main road and they destroyed our business district. And St. John, it's the connection to Interstate 78. And they destroyed our main road because that's where all the businesses were. So when my dad and I owned Sal's Meat Market up on College Hill, they talked about widening Cattell Street. No. Because on there you had your drugstore, your gas stations, your shoe builders, grocery stores, and all of that would be gone because that's where they were located on the street. I worked at a small grocery store, convenience store. It was called Pat's Quality Market on the 500 block of St. John Street. And when it was widened, that was torn down. There was nothing left that you could build on. They had a plan to, again, I think I can offer a lot of problems we've had with the state government and a lot of problems we have with the federal government. In the state government, PennDOT only cares about moving cars. They don't care about moving people. So many of the things that we think are great ideas, they don't get approved by PennDOT. As one of the communities, the only community in the city that in the valley that really has a rotary what we call our circle downtown, we finally got them to agree to a different traffic light pattern, which has really moved traffic through the center city much better. Mm. The system that they had, I mean, you could be in a circle for three lights. And so that's better now. You're moving cars, but we're just getting a grant to do bike lanes. We want to do alternative bike transportation. But I think, you know, and this is not a slam against Atlanta because they have to balance their budget too. And I know that ridership is way down. The public just continues to depend on their car. Mm-hmm. They want their car. And the car is paramount to, you know, being successful, I guess. And Atlanta is cutting back when I do every summer a mayor's summer youth camp. I get high school students to be a part of the group, and I spend a week with them. And this year we had an exchange student from Switzerland, and he found it very odd that you could wait an hour and a half for Atlanta, the next Atlanta. If you missed the bus by 5 minutes, you're going to wait another hour and 20 minutes to get on the bus. In Switzerland, the public transportation runs like every 10 or 15 minutes.
Right.
So if you miss a bus, you wait another 10 minutes, you get on.
Right.
He was really surprised at that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the federal government needs to step in, not the state government. The federal government needs to step in and spend the time and the money, since they're the federal government, on not just passenger rail, but better modes of public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm a real strong proponent, and so is the city, of passenger rail. We used to have connections in Easton that you could go all across the country. But my one problem is we're going to invest in 1920 technology. Why?
Hmm.
When I go to Europe, I can get on a high-speed train. I might go 140 miles an hour. But in Easton, I get on a train to go to New York. It takes me over 2 hours because it's only a 25-mile. So the rails are only rated at 25 miles an hour.
Mm.
I mean, I can go faster than a bus. And as a matter of fact, the buses get to New York in an hour and 20 minutes, and it would take 2 hours to go by train. So those people who want to sleep an extra 40 minutes in the morning to work in New York, they're gonna go on a bus. And I don't blame them.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So how else are you engaging the Southside residents? You mentioned the survey you did at National Night Out. How else are you getting their opinion and the decision-making process, engaging them?
Well, we're trying to go to big events like National Night Out, the football games, Little League football games on Saturdays at Hyle Park is a good place. Where there's thousands of people there every Saturday to watch their kids play, and their grandchildren and nephews and nieces play. We'll go to them. We're trying to collect as much data as we can before we make the final plan.
Okay. And what measures then are in place to ensure long-term sustainability of the improvements made? Or I guess you probably don't even know what measures to put in place because you don't know what you're going to do yet.
No, we don't know yet. But the measures that are put in place, people have to understand it's not forever. Cities are evolutionary. They're constantly changing. And we go through it right now because Easton has changed a lot in the 17 years that I've been there. And our city today is a much different city than it was in 2008. In 2008, I was dealing with the national gangs, the Bloods, the Crips, the Latin Kings, shootings, drug dealings on the street. We were using Narcan anywhere from 30 to 45 times a month.
Mm.
Now, this year so far, the entire year, 7.5 months, we've used it 11 times. So there's a big difference about overdosing in Easton. I mean, the amount of drug use is much lower. Because, again, that connection to the New York and Newark and Philadelphia is a lot closer for Lehigh Valley.
Right. Yes.
So we get the good and the bad.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about another thing that's happened over the last couple of years, maybe started during COVID, alfresco dining.
Ah, it did start during COVID. It was a way to get the restaurants back in business.
Right.
And we have outdoor dining. It's one of those good and bads. The good is that people see a vibrant city where people are sitting outside. I go to Europe, and I see that. And so let's say it's the middle of the summer, and no one's outside eating. They're all inside. We may be very busy. We're very fortunate. We have a great restaurant scene. But you don't know that. But when the people are outside, wow, look at all the people downtown. And that gives an impression that we're vibrant and we're busy and more people will come down because people want to be where the people are.
Mm-hmm.
And restaurants will come in and social events like bar rooms and things. Two wineries coming in. Mm-hmm. Those are important things that, especially as we attract more young adults into our apartments, these are young professionals who don't want to drive. They want to just walk to their local pub and have a beer or two and come go back home.
So the good is the economy and the vibrancy of the city. And the bad is what?
The bad is if you have a nuisance bar. Now, we don't have any left downtown. We had them. But even our nuisance bars, which some people call nuisance bars, on a Friday or Saturday night, we might get 200 or 300 young adults, like 24, 25, 28, 30 years old, in our one quadrant, our southeast quadrant. And where all of the major pubs are, Mothers, Rivals, Pearly Bakers, Drinkies, they were all there. And we would put a police officer, there was never, never do we have a problem with any of those people. So the public who didn't like that, they would call it a nuisance bar. Me, I'm saying, wow, look, it's a place where my nephews and nieces can come down and enjoy themselves without getting in trouble.
Okay, so the negative is strictly just the nightlife part of Alfresco?
Well, the negative part of Alfresco is taking away parking spaces.
Parking.
That P word.
Yeah.
Please don't ask me about the P word because it'll be here. You don't have time on the show. The P word is, you know, let's say I go to an event, a Chamber of Commerce event at Steel Stacks. I have to park in that parking lot, which is about a block away. No one complains to Mayor Wet Reynolds about the parking. But if that was in Easton, oh my gosh, they'd be up in arms. We have plenty of parking in Easton. What we have is a walking problem. People want to be able to park right in front of the restaurant they're going to or in front of the store they're going to shop at. But we have plenty of parking. Our studies show that. But, I mean, after 5 o'clock at night, for those people coming to town to eat, if they park in a garage, it's only 50 cents an hour. You park on the street, it's $1.50. Because our parking studies, the consultants told us that the parking in the garage should be cheaper than parking on the street to encourage people to park in the garage. It still doesn't happen. I mean, we still have over 500 spaces available after 5 o'clock in the garages.
Interesting.
Because they don't care. They want the convenience. Again, Americans want their car. They depend on their car, and they depend on ease of access to wherever they're going.
Yeah. I've said this to Mayor Reynolds, I think, when we were talking about his transportation plans. You know, I'll go to New York City for a weekend and walk everywhere because I don't have a car. I've parked it. It's staying parked. And I walk everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's a mile to dinner. I'm walking.
Yeah.
I get home, and I say, oh, yeah, I'm going to walk 10 blocks to the pub. I never do it.
No.
It's just a totally different mentality
It's because you expect to do it in New York. You don't expect to do it in your hometown. And that's what it comes down to. So we deal with that. On Tuesday night, we had a parking summit. We had about 45 people there. And I said, look, don't come up to the microphone and complain. I've heard all the complaints. I know we have a parking problem. But that's a good thing. As the one person who owns a restaurant downtown told me, she said, I was here through the bad, and there were plenty of parking, but I couldn't even pay my bills. Now there's no parking, but I'm busy. And that's the dichotomy that exists. You don't want to have parking availability on every block. You want to be able to control the parking so that you're busy and create a downtown nightlife that attracts people. And that's with good restaurants, good music. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yep. So how, with the economic impact, obviously during COVID, you were able to keep these restaurants open with alfresco dining. What about now? What is the impetus or the economic driver for allowing this to keep going?
The vibrancy. I think the vibrancy. I mean, I think being outside, people see people and they want to be with people. We did that for the restaurants and it worked out very, very well. Our most successful project was our winter market. We said, okay, we did that for the restaurants. What are we going to do for retailers? So we put up, and we created, like they do in Europe, they call it the Christmas Village. And the Winter Village has been very successful. This will be our fourth year, and we continue to do it. I mean, because it was so successful. As a matter of fact, one brick-and-mortar store told me that if it wasn't for the first one during COVID, they would have probably closed in January or February. But they made enough that they could work through the first 6 months of the next year. And that's important. I mean, I used to own a small business. And as a small business owner, you need all the creativity that you can. And whatever that creativity is, I remember Lafayette College used to have their alumni parade up on College Hill. And I put out a Coke wagon with hot dogs and a Coke for $1. And people lined up. And then they moved it downtown. I said, oh, man, I want it back up on College Hill. But, you know, you have to think outside the box when you're a small business. The big businesses use the Targets and the Walmarts. They use the media. Well, the local store owner doesn't have that type of budget to use, you know, $400,000 right. a year on
advertising.
Media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's why our festivals are so successful. We just had Clam Jam, which was the biggest. It was the 10th year, and it was bigger than ever. Mm-hmm. It was bigger, busier than Heritage Day. And we have Garlic Festival and Bacon Festival coming up in October and November. And we're looking forward to that because people come downtown and they're from their suburbs. Oh, my gosh, look what's going on. And they had a good time. So they come back.
Right.
And our festivals have been used as an economic development tool to bring people back to the city. But the winter market, we have big plans. We do the ice skating, you know, the free ice skating for kids that – I remember growing up in the projects, in public housing. So I have a place in my heart for low-income people. So the ice skating rink is free for anybody, any kid who lives in the city of Easton, because their parents are already paying property taxes, et cetera. So we try to give them for free. I'm trying to get a carousel.
Oh.
And the problem with the carousel is that nobody wants to come in just on weekends. Because we only have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. The Village isn't open every day. It's open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I would do the same thing. Kids from Easton can get on for free.
That's awesome. So are there plans, what are your plans, I guess, for addressing concerns related to increasing costs for restaurants to participate in alfresco dining? Because they have to pay into the program?
Yeah, they do. Okay. They have to pay for the spaces that they're taking up.
Okay, so they pay for the parking spaces
We increased it this year, but we still don't make as much as we would make if somebody was parked there. Wow. And in front of a store, in front of a restaurant, they'd be parked every day. Mm-hmm. And it'd be a buck and a half, you know, the last 5 hours of the day, 5 to 10. So, you know, they would be making, you know, $7. We would be making $7.50 a day. So we've passed that on to them, but it also costs us money to put the – I believe that we need to protect the people who are behind here. So we have cement barriers that go around it. And those cement barriers take, you know, our entire streets department a day to put them up, a day to take them out, or actually more than a day. Now, we don't have as much participation this year. Not as many people, restaurants wanted to participate because they couldn't. They said they didn't make any money. But what it allowed during COVID was them to continue to serve. What allows them today is to expand their footprint.
Right.
So if they have a 60 top in the restaurant and they have another 30 top outside, now they have a 90 top restaurant. They could be busier.
Right.
And they are.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about climate. My favorite topic, because it's so easy to talk about with the highs and the lows that we've had. It was fall last week.
Yeah.
And it summer, was summer this week.
Summer to, yeah.
So everybody has to chip in on climate action, and cities are part of that. So the city of Easton has set an ambitious goal for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. What are those key strategies that you're using?
The key strategy is always going to be alternative energy sources, non-fossil. And, you know, planting more trees to reduce the amount of heat that comes into the city, electric charging stations, solar energy on rooftops. In 2008, when I first became mayor, actually I think it was 9 when we actually passed the ordinance, we have a solar energy ordinance. So if you spend the money to put solar energy panels on your roof, the next door neighbor can't build a 20-story building and block your sun.
Mm.
So we're trying to be proactive about what will be the issues if somebody down the line changes their environment. And we've been successful so far. The types of cars we buy for the city fleet are hybrids, more like we just ordered 4 hybrid cars for the police department. We ordered an electric vehicle for the police department last year, which does all of our parking enforcement cars are electric. I mean, they're basically nothing more than, call it Gemco, I think. It's an oversized golf cart that has heating and air conditioning inside, and it drives around the town and has a license plate recognition on top of the roof, and they give out the tickets. So we're trying to reduce our greenhouse emissions by 2050 to zero.
Zero.
And wow. We use a group in Easton that is very, very popular and very successful that's used by everyone from the federal government to NASA to everybody else. Nurture Nature helped us with our green our climate action plan, and our CAP is done with them, and then they created our baseline, our 2019 baseline of what our greenhouse emissions were then and in the city. And so, for example, 100% of the electricity that we buy from the city is renewable. Mm-hmm. And we buy that through the Pennsylvania Municipal League that has a program with Constellation Energy. We pay a little bit more, but not much.
Okay. So what challenges do you anticipate? We're getting down to the last few minutes here. That went quick.
Very quick.
So what challenges do you anticipate in implementing the Climate Action Plan?
There's still a group of people who don't believe it.
Right.
And that's probably the biggest challenge we have, is getting people to buy into the program, that there's a reason why we have intense heat. We have a reason why we have – I'm so glad they got away from the global warming term, because, well, what's 1 degree a year, big deal? You know, well, they may be right, but going into climate change, no one's going to disagree with that, because the Earth has historically gone through a climate change. You know, we had the Ice Age, and that created a lot of our river valleys and mountains. I mean, we went, you know, and now we're in a period of, we're in a lull where we don't have that. But we will have it again. And our intense, as a city built on three waterways, the Lehigh River, the Delaware River, and Bushkill Creek, we get flooded. And our flooding has been more intense than it has in the last few years. So, and the temperatures are going up. We now open up our fire hydrants for, again, low-income families that can't afford to go to our pools. So I think having buy-in by the general public is important.
Right, right. Is there anything else that you'd like to hit on before we're out of time here?
The only thing I'd like to think of is thank the station for being available. I think NPR is very important, and WDIY brings us that, and all the other local issues like today's program, this evening's program. But I think it's really important that people stay informed and engaged. People say, you know, oh, you probably don't want to hear any complaints. No, I'd like to hear their complaint. I would like to just hear from the public. We have it. Last night, I think, in our city council meeting, we had three members of the public who had something to say, but why don't you come in to voice your opinion? You can. You don't have to worry about going to Harrisburg or Washington, D.C., and you would get on the floor anyway.
Yeah. Dialogue, right?
Yeah.
Well, with that, we're out of time. I want to thank you, Mayor Panto, for joining us this evening and sharing important information for the residents of Easton and all of our residents of the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, we're very appreciative of the Lehigh Valley residents coming into Easton. It used to be go west, young man, go west. So everybody went to Bethlehem and Allentown, but everybody came to Easton.
Yep.
But today they are.
I remember when I was at LVDC in 2005, it was the redheaded stepchild.
Uh-huh.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore.
So you've done great work. Thank you again for being with us. And if you'd like to listen to this program again, you can go to our website at wdiy.org, the WDIY app, where Valley Voices is archived, or your favorite podcast or smart speaker platform. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell. Have a great evening.